You are listening to Gut Checks. We're giving you access to stories of hope and inspiration, where we've all had to dig deep and face the challenges of life head on every day. I'm your host, Paul Weigel, an 11-year cancer survivor, 6-time Ironman triathlete, and most importantly, a dad to an awesome teenage daughter. Join me as we explore the power of perseverance while finding and clinging to the joy in life, no matter the odds. Hello, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Gut Checks, celebrating the power of love, hope, strength, and perseverance. I'm Paul Weigel, and today I'm delighted, beyond delighted, to have Howard Brown, who is a fellow cancer survivor and advocate with me today. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Paul. You are the Iron Dad, and I am Mr. Shining Brightly, and I am just thrilled. And it's afternoon East Coast time, but we're here, and it's awesome. Thank you for having
Perfect.
Me.
Perfect. And I will be putting on my glasses in a little bit, so we'll be in a good spot. So this is a special Father's Day episode. I know that we've talked some as I'm on one of yours, and this is the same for me, that we are getting this out. And so much of, that's one of the reasons, I'm so delighted to have you on for a bunch of reasons, but Father's Day is so important. And for people who are listening to the podcast today, Howard and I met at the Cologuard Classic about 2.5-3 months ago. And we are sharing similar stories of our cancer experience, just as much about the fact that we have daughters and we both were sick and dealing with cancer with kids. And that is such a different dynamic in trying to explain to them and how things work. As you'll see, we've got so many things to talk about. Let me give a full bio for you here, Howard, so I'm not discrediting you. You are a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, the best-selling author of Shining Brightly, which I've got my copy of right here. And you've got your copy there. Yep, cool. You are not only the author, you're an award-winning international speaker, cancer whisperer, inspirational podcaster, survivorship coach, health technology consultant, and a 2-time stage 4 cancer patient and survivor 30 years apart. And that part is just amazing. Howard shares the keys of leading a resilient life with hope that strives successful community leaders, business innovators, and healthcare advocates. So be prepared to be inspired. So that is a great summary for what you do. As I was preparing for this interview, I was drawn back to thinking about yourself as a cancer whisperer. And just kind of starting with that, what does a cancer whisperer mean to you?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for that introduction. And you mentioned it in the opening that the best title and job is dad, right? I mean, that's how we came together. My daughter's 23, and yours is an amazing teen, pre-teeny. And that's how we came together. And we'll give a shout out to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance for bringing us together, and Cologuard and the Exact Sciences as well, because that's how we met. But that's the best title and job we know. And you and I just sat there just, beaming over fatherhood. And that's incredible. And I love having a day that's our own, but that's every day for us is
that is true. I know my daughter says, why don't kids have every day? And I'm like, every day is kids' day. But realistically, every day is Father's Day for us, right? I mean, that the chance that we've had this opportunity, that we are still around, that we're still breathing, and that we get to see our daughters grow up. So how has that experience been for her? Because she was obviously a little older than mine, but you had two different times with that. So could you talk a little bit about those experiences?
Sure. Let me go back to first question, and I will, because Emily was a freshman in high school when I was diagnosed with stage 3B colon cancer. And she was, front and row center seat, along with my caregiving wife, in the house, just like your daughter with us. And so the cancer whisper thing is, And we'll get back to the kids and their view, because that's really what your book about in that perspective is that I made up the term cancer whisperer. Okay. Yeah. So when I call that mentorship, it's just another word for mentorship. And when I was searching for answers, people took me under their wing. Okay. From the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, which they call Allies, from Colontown, and they took me under their wing. And these are people that were 5, 10 steps ahead of me, a year ahead of me, that got to no evidence of disease. And that's all I wanted, was to be able to have a pathway forward. When you actually, I got diagnosed, the chemotherapy, the surgeries failed me, the clinical trial failed me. And when they tell you that you have 4% chance of living the next 6 months, your window, that time clock on your life is shrinking. And then also told me that they didn't have many options for me in colorectal cancer. We have very limited options except to repurpose the old stuff that didn't work. So for me to be able to find the right people to be able to give me the guidance, the knowledge, to be able to make other decisions, because you are never out of options. You are never out of options. And I needed to learn that. And they guided me through finding this crazy surgery called cytoreduction hyperthermal intraperitoneal chemotherapy, so CRS HIPEC for short, where they put hot chemotherapy, they took out all the cancer in my stomach, they shaved my liver, they took out my bladder, they took out my gallbladder, and then they poured a hot chemotherapy agent to grab absorption to kill microcell cancer. This is in March of 18, and it's a 13.5-hour surgery, and thank God I found out about it. Thank God I had people that had gone through it. They prepared me for it. And those were my cancer whisperers. And Paul, here's the beautiful thing, is that you and I, and for the folks, even a shout out to Man Up to Cancer, we are the cancer whisperers for each other. It's a beautiful thing. Cancer sucks, but this has been the beautiful thing about cancer, is meeting guys like you and me and being able to actually spread the love and support other people going through this awful, awful journey.
Well, and that's some of the great work that you've been doing with Colontown too, and Paltown, and having those communities that are all there, that is such a huge network and so valuable, certainly compared to when I was sick 10 years ago, that I would say, where do I go? How do I get information? And there was basically nothing out there. So it is, and you not only need to be fighting, and you not only need to be exploring and getting more answers, like you said, there's never a time that there are no more options, but people don't necessarily take that responsibility to own up to it and continue to drive. So that is a great point. Let's go back to our daughters for a second here. You said she was in high school as you started going through, and you're going through just a critical time, obviously, as you went to stage 4 and you've got a teeny percentage chance of you're being told that. How much information did you share? What was she going through during this? It's a lot different than my 3-year-old who really didn't know what was going on.
It is different. So, and she's super articulate, super intellectual. She saw the raw deal. Not everything, but a lot of it, because she's in that same household. So when I'm coming back from surgeries, or I'm having, you know, major side effects from chemo, and I can't get out of bed that day, she's seeing that. And also that the thing is that, you know, I tried very hard to stay somewhat active in her life. I was the team's soccer manager. Although maybe I couldn't drive to the game, another dad would drive to the game and we'd have both players in the back seat. I had a lot of windshield time with her. So I actually, and she was able to handle a majority of that. And we had the serious talk that, you know what, there is a chance that dad may not make it. So that's why this valuable time of driving, you know, 5 hours to Indianapolis together, let's make sure we get an ice cream. Let's make sure that we, you know, talk and break down the game and talk about it and talk about anything else you want. And she was the DJ. She said, "Dad, you're listening to my EDM music." So she won that victory. So I learned EDM music. So that's kind of how it went. And what I did learn, though, I want a very valuable lesson, is that she disclosed something after, when I was more on the upswing, and she came to my wife, Lisa, and I, and she said, "Dad, I have to tell you, for these last few years, people have not asked how I'm doing. My friends, family members, it's always, how's your dad? How's your dad?" And I was like, oh my God. I mean, we're so in the moment and so on the front lines, we didn't do that. So what we did was end up getting her some help, getting her support and getting her some therapy and being able to make sure that she had the support she was necessary. And it was a blind spot for my wife and I. We said we were sorry and we were going to fix that. And she's stronger than ever, but you can't be perfect. So that was one of the lessons that I learned there.
Well, you bring up such a big point of we are all dealing with it and it's right in front of us. And I considered my time while I was going through treatment being like a circus clown of trying to keep everything up in the air, knowing something was going to fall. But I do remember people just kind of looking at me and saying, how are you? And they would give me that sad look and where it was depressing for me to see some of these people talk like that. So I can imagine as a kid of being, that's almost an extra burden of how is your dad doing? And I mean, how much did they need to carry forward? That's a huge testament to her, not only to get through that, but then to be able to talk about it.
Here's a really good lesson. When someone asks you how you're doing, I was like, well, I just had chemo, I'm living in the bathroom, and how's your day? You know, and the better, right. The better question is, what do you need? How can I help you? That's a really good question to ask instead of how you're doing. And, you know, I'm feeling just absolutely awful, you know.
And as cancer patients, I know for me, it was really hard to ask for help. And that is one of the changes I've gone through now talking more and more with cancer survivors is you absolutely fight like hell. But at the same time, when you need somebody to fight for you, do not be afraid to do it and do not be embarrassed because people are there. And so if we are building up the normality where people say, what can I do? How can I help? All those things, it really makes it so much better for people who are afraid to do it. Totally
right.
Agree.
So the rules that we've learned, right? Okay. And we talk in our cancer communities about is one, don't isolate, right? Because isolation breeds darkness and it can breed depression and you end up thinking of the worst. And second is in your time of need, be selfish.
Yes.
Be selfish. You got to get through this and call in the cavalry. And if you don't have a cavalry, guys like you and I will help you build your cavalry. That's what
Absolutely.
We do. That's what we do.
And the amount of work that we put in, that Colintown puts in, that Man Up to Cancer. There's so many people there that can be acting as advocates for sure and support. And all these people have resilience. I mean, we're involved with this because we have been resilient and we are fighting and we're trying to view this as something we can conquer. And I know resilience is so important to you too. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Resilience is a muscle. But it's actually made up of a lot of different components. So there's an emotional resilience. There's a physical resilience. There actually is a financial resilience and in relationships resilience. So those four all actually are muscles that can be weakened or strengthened. Okay. And that's really important to know because you have to build that. And not just the patient. Your care partners and your families all have that going on as well. And the care partner has to be really resilient because, you know, that's a really important person that's gathering info, making sure your appointments, taking your meds, raising the family, making sure that there's food on the table sometimes. So they take many forms and factors. And so all four of those components, okay, are part of what I call my resilience code. And they can become part of your resilience code, whoever's watching and listening as well. And it doesn't just apply to cancer. It applies in life. We came out of the pandemic in a loneliness state. We're living on Zoom. We're living on our phones. And we're not interacting with people. We're not getting a hug, a handshake, working in the collaborative teams in person. So all that's very important. So that resilience code applies across your life wheel.
I think that's a great point. We're still dealing with the ramifications of COVID several years later, right? In terms of how we interact with people, here we are on a podcast and that is awesome, but thank goodness we had a chance to meet in person and establish those relationships even more. But being resilient is so key. along the lines of being resilient, as you're juggling different things, Colorectal Cancer Alliance, Kellentown, you were at the American Society of Clinical Oncology Conference this last week and talked with hundreds of people and doctors. And what was that experience like? And what are some of the issues that you heard people talking about?
So this is important. So ASCO, which you just, you know, pronounced the, what it stands for.
I stumbled through, yes.
Yeah, thank you. American Society of Clinical Oncologists. It's a mouthful. So it brings together probably 40,000 to 50,000 people. By the way, about only 25 masks that I saw there. These are doctors, right? These are medical affairs people. These are pharma. These are advocacy orgs. It is incredible. There are posters. There are developments. The people are showing their pipelines. And when I take this all in, there's a lot of resources being applied to solving this very complex jigsaw puzzle called cancer. And I appreciate that. And it gives me hope. It gives me hope. And after the pandemic, when they actually did the vaccines, they learned a lot from that. And they're pushing forward now. So there are all types of new screening blood tests that are coming out. There are all new types of things that deal with side effects. They're moving faster than ever before. Not fast enough for colorectal cancer, which is, in the U.S., certainly the number one killer for men and number two killer for women, with 153,000 diagnoses. 100,000 people will be in treatment in the U.S. this year, and 53,000 will, their cancer burden will be too great and they'll get called to heaven. And a higher percentage of minority community, indigenous community, poorer community, rural communities, 25% higher. So we need to reach those people in need as well. So I learned a lot. Yeah. I shared a lot. And you know what? I realized that the expression that I coined, it's a team sport, I watched it in action. It was a team sport. And it was really, that's the hope I came out of there with, although I was exhausted.
I can imagine. Well, you talk about the team sport, and because sports and interaction like that has been super great for you, certainly as you've gone through treatment and afterward, and you're a decent basketball player. And so being active there, you're continuing to be involved with that as well, with everything else you're doing.
So that goes to the fitness part of it, the activity part of it. So I call that, and again, you have yours, and that was, we came together. We're athletes. Okay. We were maybe better athletes when we were younger. So calling me a decent basketball player is a very fair remark at age 58, but I'm still out there playing. I played 2 hours last night before the Boston Celtics beat the Mavericks, which I'm a Boston fan, Boston.
A nice drop of that, by the way. Yes.
Yeah, okay, I know. I had to slip that in. Thank you. But so here's the deal, is that I actually, in my book, okay, talk about finding your happy place. And the reason you have to find your happy place and go there as much as possible, I call that your stress-free zone. Right, that is really important to go there as much as you can. Schedule it in if you have to. On the basketball court, I'm thinking about shooting hoops and talking trash and talking sports, and I'm not thinking about cancer. I'm not thinking about what I have to do next. I let myself free in that moment. Now, I also do that hiking. I also do that mountain biking as well, but I don't care what it is. Is it yoga? Is it meditation? Is it cooking? Is it art? Is it travel? Find that happy place. I know for you, you're doing biking and swimming and running. And again, I can't even imagine when you're swimming for 2 miles what you're thinking. But
oh, see, I was going to say that is my happy.
Isn't that your happy place?
Because because I just start counting strokes and everything else disappears because I'm just going 1, 2, 3. So in the same, you're talking trash. I'm just disappearing.
I love it. And so, but again, that you're not thinking about cancer.
Right.
You're thinking getting and finishing and get what, and being in that moment, and that focus helps. And those endorphins rise when you do that. And that's really important. And so activity, stay active, get enough sleep, get enough hydration. Those are all still very, and good diet. Those are very important components to living that, good, resilient life.
And that, those are key messages, regardless of if you have had cancer or not, right? I mean, and as you said, this is for everybody, but I know that I've talked to a ton of people, I hate to say, current patients who say, oh, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be exercising. Oh, I'm too tired to be doing it. And that is just unacceptable. We really need to have people being strong, doing everything they can. You were doing athletic things while you were going through treatment as you could, and so was I. And if you don't, your body's just getting weaker and weaker.
Exactly. Let's shout out to the Colorectal Coalition. because they have a slogan, get your rear in gear.
In gear.
Get going. Get moving. Absolutely. Take a walk. Walk the dog. Do something. You go out on a sailboat and get fresh air. Go to the beach. You know, go to the mountains. You got to do that.
Change it up.
Yeah. Right. Get moving.
So along those lines about getting moving and taking on this responsibility, one of the things in your book that you've talked about is I am the why. And I can imagine that some of that interacts here too.
All right. So everyone's talking about finding your why. Okay. Well, we as patients and caregivers, we are the why to the entire healthcare system. Why are they in business? They're in business to get us, I call it one more day, one more week, one more month, right, one more year. We're looking in small bites when you get diagnosed with cancer as to maybe your life is being shortened, and that hourglass is going pretty quickly.
So very quickly, right.
I am the why, but Paul, you are the why. My wife, the caregiver, you know, your daughter's the why. And when you're talking about coming from ASCO, where billions and billions and maybe trillions of dollars are being spent on cancer cure and cancer prevention, and then survivorship, which I think needs even more focus because, you know,
yes,
living with cancer, it can be 18 million to 30 million living with cancer, and your lives are not exactly back on track 100%. You still got things to deal with, but that's the why. And so when I speak out there, I say, I'm your why. Okay. You want to find a why? It's us, the patients and the caregivers and the families that are going through this. It's very simple. It's right in front of your face, right? Now, our whys, our personal whys are our daughters, right? And my family and all that. So we also have whys. But you got to sometimes point it out to people that you're looking at a why right here. You're looking at a why right there, Paul. So that's what I speak about in my book and in my talks when I'm speaking on stage.
Very cool. And along the same lines, you've also developed this incredible series of podcasts. I know I'm super excited you're here, but your Shining Brightly podcast has just grown exponentially certainly in the last 6 months.
It has in the last 6 months. I started in February of 23, and I wanted to have a platform to be able to talk about topics. Now, I did not want my podcast to be cancer specific. I've had many cancer guests, but I wanted to talk to people, and I call them my heroes, to talk about human resolve. You've overcome something. What have you learned? And then how are you helping others with that and share some inspiration? This world needs inspiration right now. Okay. It needs inspiration. There can be dark times that we ebb and flow through this life. And particularly I'm concerned with the amount of hate that's going on. People are choosing actions and words to hate. And I am just the opposite. Let's choose words of kindness and words of gratitude and words of help and healing, right? And joy. Bring more joy to my life, not more hate. So I do. And the podcast has just really taken off. It's a under 30-minute show every Wednesday. You will be featured this Wednesday, June 12th, as we've actually shared the Father's Day issues with us, and maybe we get a double whammy and get to more people.
Hopefully,
and
yes,
touch more hearts. I think so. That's the goal, right? And
right,
it's a beautiful thing. And so I love meeting people. I love learning what they've overcome, the lessons learned, and how they're helping others and inspiring others. And so I'm having a blast doing the show, and I'm so glad that it's making an impact and touching people's lives. And that's really the point of this, right? That's the point of why we wrote a book and why we speak on stage and why we actually have a podcast.
It's changing lives. It's making people's lives better every single day. I 100% agree with that. I hope so too. So with all the different things you're doing, I mean, we're talking about the book, what's the next chapter in your life? What are you envisioning as you continue to move ahead?
So
for a long time to come.
Yes, let's hope so. So I'm still in surveillance. So next week I go visit my oncology team. I going into it, very positive mindset and energy, saying that everything's going to be fine. I believe in my heart that it will be, but I will do my blood counts and I will do a scan of chest, pelvis, and abdomen. And I hope to see those magical three letters, NED, no evidence of disease at this time. And that will push me closer to a 5-year time point, which they potentially can call remission in September. And so that's the first step. The second step is that I want to keep on keeping on with my speaking, the podcast, keep promoting the book. I'm in a bunch of collaborative books as well that are coming out. And my wife and I are more empty nesters. We're in a different spot right now. My daughter is launched. She's a TV reporter in Missoula, Montana. She just won an Emmy for a climate change story on Flathead Lake. I'm so proud of that. And you got to celebrate those times. But Howard, unfortunately, I'm looking at ways to bring in income. So what consulting projects, what more speaking gigs, paid speaking gigs, put the paid there. And then also, you know, is there a job in my future at 58 years old? I sure hope so. So that's what I'm going to do. And this will be a little bit of a public announcement, is that my wife and I are going to take a few months in California this winter. And so I will be back and forth between California and get out of the, you know, the tough Michigan winter. And that's going to be a new experience for us as well. I'm sure I'll meet tons of new people. And we were in California when we met, in LA, in Santa Monica, in Pacific Palisades. Oh, cool. And then I moved up to Silicon Valley. We're going to make a return visit to Dana Point, California, halfway between LA and San Diego, Laguna Beach and all that stuff.
I've been there and actually was relatively near there when I was doing a recording with Mike Riley on my book last week. So it's just beautiful spot. So
that's next up for us. Right.
Well, it's funny. You're talking about leaving in the winter to get away and me living here in Arizona. And I'm already working on trying to figure out my schedule for next week and how I can get out of the heat. So we're at different worlds, different times.
But you're living in the valley of the sun. 114 this summer. Will thank God for air conditioning.
That's the only way we can keep going here. So, well, I want to be super sensitive to your time. One of the things that you've done in your Shining Brightly podcast is you talk about an inspirational message and that you have something that you would like your, I was going to say clients or patients, but we're not clients or patients, we're guests, right? So what message would you like to share with my audience? It's a similar audience to yours, and I'm trying to bring in different people with different experiences. So what message would you say?
So I'm going to put on my glasses because I want to shine brightly for you. Okay,
let's Paul. Shine brightly.
We're shining brightly because I'm in awe of your fatherhood and how you've built your book and how you actually can complete a damn triathlon. It's amazing. I have to tell you, it's a big honor because that's an amazing thing that you can do and a human push that human body and the mindset to complete that. So I just will say this. We all have the chance to choose to shine brightly every day. I hope you will, for yourself. Okay, there's the not, you know, be selfish. Shine brightly for yourself just a little each day, then go shine brightly for others in your neighborhood, in your communities, in your message, in your actions, and the world will become a better place. And that's a small ask, I hope, for everyone.
That is a heck of a testament and a great message. Where can people find more about you, Howard, and everything that's going on in your world?
Come find me at shiningbrightly.com, the book, the speaking, the podcast, and more importantly, our advocacy, you know, in the cancer world. I also do a lot in the Babson College entrepreneurship world and in the interfaith world, too. I have a couple different lanes, but come find me at shiningbrightly.com. I'll interact with you. Come learn more. Come talk to me about speaking gigs. Be glad to get to know you. Thanks.
Shiningbrightly.com. Remember that, everybody. I know I've gone there. I've learned a lot, and I encourage you to as well. Cool. All right. Howard Brown, author and cancer whisperer, thank you for your time today.
I'm so honored to be here. Thank you, and have a happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you. Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found some inspiration on the power of perseverance while finding and clinging to the joy in life, no matter the odds. If you feel you learned something new at this podcast today, share it with others. To learn more and continue this conversation, join us at irondadbook.com and make sure to sign up for our newsletter and free gift. I'm looking forward to sharing more with you soon. Take care.